change around my team. Yeah, we off the leash. You can look us in the eyes, see we have peace. Black and gold, that's the colors when we go to war. When we step up on that field, you gon' hear my roar. We them tiger cats, we them tiger cats. We them tiger cats, we them tiger cats.
Yeah, nobody hitting harder, better keep your guard up. Cause with everything we draw, we can score it when we wanna.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, how you doing this week, buddy? We missed last week, and I just want to check in. How's everything going with you?
It's good. You know, life is good right now, and, you know, we missed last week after a loss, but now we're back after a big win against the Stampeders, and I'm excited to talk some Ticats football with you, my friend.
Yeah, first time ever we'll get to talk about a victory over Calgary, so this is a historic episode of the podcast, but I would like to talk a bit before we start, Mike, about why we didn't record last week. I guess the easiest thing to say is I myself was going through some personal problems. For the past 7 years, me and my brother had lived together, and my brother has a son, and he lived with us, obviously. So I had been living with my nephew since he was 16 months old, and he's going to turn 9 in September. And last Tuesday, I'm actually getting misty-eyed talking about it for the first time. I've been good for most of the week, and now that I'm talking about it again, it's making me a little sad. But I'll soldier through. Last Tuesday, so a week ago today, they moved out to PEI, your old stomping grounds. My brother had an opportunity that he couldn't pass up to buy a beautiful house out there and hopefully give my nephew sort of the life that he's always wanted to give him. So I wish them well, and I just miss them a lot. So last Tuesday when they left, we were going to record, and I sent you a message earlier in the day saying I just didn't think that was possible. And so it's been a rough week for me. We tried to see if we could do it later in the week, and it just never really worked out. I just, you know, sometimes you go through some stuff in your personal life, and it makes like talking about football really not matter. I'm sure you understand that as well. I'm sure everyone understands. I sent out a tweet about it, letting people know like why sort of I wasn't going to be online a lot, and just, you know, kind of to recharge and just get away from all of the, not necessarily negativity, but like the BS that you kind of deal with online in this day and age. So I just need to take a little break for myself, and it had nothing to do with the Ticats losing. I got a comment from a troll in my inbox being like, the only reason you didn't want to do a show last week is because they lost. And I didn't respond, but before the show, I told Mike that, and I said, man, I should have responded with, if we didn't want to record after losses, we would have quit in the summer of 2017 when the team was going through that 0-8 stretch. So no, it had nothing to do with the loss. It was a personal issue that I was dealing with two members of my family that I'm very close with moving away very far and it being very difficult on me. So I'm better now. I'm in a good place. I've been talking to them. We talked about messaged about this game with my brother after I saw it, and I've been talking to my nephew, and it's all good stuff. They're happy out there. I'm happy for them. And now I'm ready to get back to talking about football, Mike. So are you ready to talk about something that hasn't happened or hadn't happened in almost 8 years?
I'm so ready to talk about it. It's been a long road coming to beat those filthy Stampeders. I just don't like them very much, but I'm glad you're feeling better, my friend. And we can get to it. And you know, the funny thing is, we get more listeners after a loss usually, or we used to from when I used to check the numbers. But so if you know, that had nothing to do with it. We talked many times after losses. You know, we went 0-8 in 2017. And I don't think we missed an episode that had nothing to do with it. So it will just move on, and we'll talk about a win now.
Absolutely. I one last thing, though. I just do want to thank everyone that did reach out, whether via text message, social media, or whatever. a lot of people. It showed me the good in people in reaching out and saying like, hey, take your time. We're there for you, buddy. It really meant a lot. So I want to thank everybody who listens to the show that reached out and gave their not condolences is the wrong word because it's not like they died. I don't know really what word to use, but I just want to thank everyone for doing that. And now let's talk some football, Mike. The Hamilton Tiger Cats beat the Calgary Stampeders. And I want to repeat that again because it's something we've never said before. The Hamilton Tiger Cats beat the Calgary Stampeders. They did it 30-23 last Saturday at Tim Hortons Field. This is the first time that our Tiger Cats have beaten the Stamps since 2011. And the interesting thing about that, and I think we've talked about this numerous times before, is that was one of the rare games that both you and I were in attendance for. TD Atlantic and Moncton. What do you remember about that game? My two memories, well, I wonder if they're the same as yours. Marcus Thigpen, I remember, had a massive game, like two touchdowns, like 150 yards receiving. I think they started him at slot back for the first time. And I remember Matt Carter got absolutely obliterated on a hit early in the game. And like, I think he was carted off the field. It was that bad. Those are my two standout memories from the game, Mike. What do you remember about that game in Moncton?
Well, I remember I had a front row seat, which I've never had at a football game. That was pretty cool. I remember there was a flea flicker from Kevin Glenn. It might have been to Thigpen.
I think it was.
I don't recall ever seeing a flea flicker live, so that really stood out to me. And there was also a jackass who sat beside me, and he made fun of the CFL the whole time. But that was unfortunate. But I remember being really happy that it was a high-scoring, entertaining game because I can't remember if there was one or two touchdown Atlantics before that game, but the games weren't that entertaining, and I was always really disappointed because this is the first look that Atlantic Canada gets at the CFL, in a live venue, and I thought that the games kind of let them down. But I was really high on, I think it was 55-30 something the final score was. So I was really happy about that. And of course, a Ticats win, you can always be happy about that.
Yeah, 2011. I think that was the year that they ended up getting to the East Final, was it, and lost to Winnipeg, I think. So it was a good year for the
Yes.
Ticats that year. And so maybe this victory over the Stamps will mean it's a good year for the Ticats again. But it's just so. Like the streak is broken. What was that? I think it was 15 consecutive games that they had lost, and now it's all gone away. And I know there's going to be people out there. Well, they didn't do it against Bo, and they. I don't care, man. I really don't care. They won this game. They got the monkey of beating the Calgary Stampeders off their back. That's good enough for me. Let's move on and dissect this a little bit more, Mike. Let's talk about the offense. And there's only one place to start when it comes to players on offense, and that's with Speedy B, Brandon Banks. What more can we say about this guy when it comes to playing in the Canadian Football League? I wrote a piece for Three Down Nation about the game. I don't think it's been published yet, but it will be. But I will make the claim here that I made there. Brandon Banks, to me, is the best player in the CFL, period. End of statement. Not the best receiver, not the best playmaker, not the most dangerous player, the best player, period. Mike, do you back me up on that statement?
He's up there. He's
He's
up there,
there.
Josh.
He's in the top
Okay,
two, and he
well.
ain't two. That's what I'm saying. He's the best,
All right,
period.
well, you put me on
Unstoppable.
the spot. I'd have to think about it. Like, but listen, he is one of the best players I've ever seen play on the Ticats. I mean, you look at what he does. He's scoring different ways. In the receiving position when he's returning kicks and punt. He had the tremendous past where he returned kicks and he was basically just a returner, and now we've seen for the last 2 years that he's a tremendous receiver as well. He continues to impress, and at times I've kind of criticized him for his takes online on Twitter and all that stuff, and I just want to say I don't care what he thinks. I don't care what he says. He is just a tremendous player for the Ticats, and I'm glad that he's on this team.
The offense wasn't great in this one, and we'll touch on that in a bit, but you just look at Banks' numbers. 19, or sorry, 19. 9 catches, 86 yards, 2 touchdowns, and then we will touch on more special teams, but we have to bring up the missed field goal return of 115 yards for a touchdown. 3 total touchdowns in this game. He is now number one in the league in receiving yards by a wide margin, number one in the league in yards per game. So even though he's played more games than any other player, he's still number one in that category. Number one in receptions, number one in targets, number two, I believe, in receiving touchdowns, but number one in total touchdowns if you add in the two missed field goal touchdowns and the rushing touchdown he has in this year. He's tops of the tops in everything. That's why I say he's the best in the game. And
could
right
be the
now,
MLP this year.
Yeah. That's what I was just going to say. Like, if we were to give an MOP for the first third of the season, it's Brandon Banks, and it's not even close. And in this game, he was, again, I'm not going to say he was the only player trying because that's ridiculous, but he was the guy that just, he took this team, put this team on his back. We hear this about quarterbacks a lot. Oh, he put the team on his back and willed them to victory. That's what Brandon Banks did in this game. He basically said, I'm sick of losing to the Stamps. I'm not doing it again. And he made sure that it didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, he accounted for 18 points, you know, three touchdowns. So, I mean, you can't do much more than that. And that missed field goal return was absolutely huge. You know, the Calgary Stampeders are up 16-8 at that point. It's late in the first half. You know, if Paredes makes that field goal, then they're up 21-8 or 19-8 or whatever it is.
I was going to say, 19. It's like, nope, your math's not good. That's rider
not
math,
good.
Son.
But yeah, I just think that turned the momentum huge in that game. You go into half and now it's a tie ball game, and you know, he just kept getting better from there. You know, he contributed in the passing game with two touchdowns, I believe, in the second half, which were huge. Just, you know, one of the best games I've ever seen from Brandon Banks. It reminds me a bit of the Eastern Final a couple years ago, where he had those two punts or kickoff returns that were massive in getting us to the Grey Cup. But I got to think that this game's you know, above that because of the two receiving touchdowns and the one missed field goal return.
So I want to share the text messages that you and I sent each other as I was watching the game on Sunday afternoon. I sent to you, almost at half, it's 16-8 Stamps, and the Cats look like shit. I'll message you when I'm done. And you, very, very succinctly, sounds good, buddy. And then, what was it? Okay, so you sent that message at 4:56 p.m. my time, 4 minutes later, in all caps, Banks just took it to the house. And you reply with, was waiting for that, LOL. So it's funny how... It's kind of cool in a way that I said that to you, and you know it's like, oh man, give him like 2 minutes.
I know
it's
coming.
He's gonna be freaking out. And it was the catalyst. That missed field goal return was, I think, the catalyst to turn this around, because like we said, and I guess we'll touch on it now, the offense wasn't great in this one. The first half, 22 total yards for the game. They were under 200 yards. I didn't think Jeremiah Mazzoli looked particularly comfortable. He had another end zone interception that was just bad. TSN even pointed it out, where he throws the 40-yard out to Banks when he had Braylon Addison open in the middle of the field. It's like, I haven't really been overly impressed with Mazzoli this year so far, but the offense in general, like, it's the slow starts continued again, and I just don't know what to make of this, Mike. All the talent on offense, and they can't get it done. Is it the players? Is it the coaches? Is it the schemes? Like, I'm not sure what the problem is here, but it's something they got to get corrected.
Yeah, they absolutely do. It just seems that, to me, that Mazzoli is not finding the open man, or his receivers aren't getting open, because he's had time in the pocket, especially when Van Zyl was in there, and it just seems that he's holding the ball, holding the ball, holding the ball. Not that he's had a terrible year, but he just hasn't been to that, you know, the performances we saw last year in the June Jones offense. It hasn't been to those heights yet. Maybe it's just it's just going to take some time, and then we'll see that offense clicking once again at that high level. But right now, it just doesn't look like it was last year. And maybe it's partially because we didn't have much of a running game in this outing. You know, Malik Irons had 14 carries for 61 yards. Not terrible numbers, but not great. And then other than that, there wasn't much rushing. I thought that they went away from Anthony Coombs, which was interesting. I don't think he had a catch. I don't think he had a carry. And he played tremendously well in the game before that, I thought. So maybe we'll see some more of him next game.
Yeah, I remember Coombs had, I think he had a carry, and then it was called back on a penalty. But yeah, not seeing much of him in the offense was a little weird. The thing with Mazzoli is the eyeball test. When we watch these games, I haven't really been overly – I think except for maybe the Argos game where he looked pretty locked in, and I think the victory over the Alouettes, I'm pretty sure he played well in that one as well. But I think he threw a couple of picks in that one actually. But then again, I think he threw like three – I don't know. I can't – I just – if I'm having a hard time coming up with a great Jeremiah Mazzoli performance, I think that tells you everything you need to know about how he's played this year. But then you look at the numbers on the page, and he leads the league in passing yards. He has 9 touchdowns to 6 interceptions, but he also has 3 rushing touchdowns. So for the touchdowns that he's accounted for personally, it's a 2-to-1 ratio. That's pretty good. Like, the numbers don't look that bad when you look at them on the page, but then when you watch it in the game, you're less impressed with how he's played. And then again, the team is also 4-1. So last year, the knock was, well, he's putting up all these numbers, but the team's not winning. And now it's the team's winning, but he's not putting up great. It's like, it feels weird that we're kind of criticizing the quarterback on a winning football team, but he hasn't played. I don't know. As a football fan who's been watching football for decades, I'm having a hard time sort of rationalizing and understanding how these two things can be, you know, like, how can the team be winning football games and the quarterback not look good? And the quarterback doesn't look good, but the stats look like, I just don't know what to think. I'm like kind of confused.
Yeah, it's a noodle scratcher. It might be the fact that our defense is better this year. Obviously, the defensive line is much improved, as we'll get into in a bit here. Maybe Mazzoli doesn't have to play as good to get victories this season. You know, we got Reinbold back. Now the special teams is looking tremendous. We're scoring on special teams. We're getting better field position because of the return game. So, you know, if he ever does, and I believe he will, if this offense starts clicking, Mazzoli starts playing well, you know, we might look like that 2015 Tiger Cats, where the offense looks tremendous, the defense is doing a great job, and the special teams are creating great field positions and scoring points. So, listen, it hasn't been great for the offense in Mazzoli so far this season, but we are 4-1, and there is a lot more time to get things in rhythm and get that offense up to shape.
Yeah, it just feels weird. I don't know, man. It just none of this makes sense to me. Because
4-1 on a Ticats team doesn't.
Well, yeah, that's. So. I mean, when was the last time we saw a 4-1 Ticats team? So, yeah, that's not something we're used to around these parts. But yeah, it's just very strange where we're seeing sort of a total team effort. If one unit's down, you kind of see one of the other ones kind of pick it up. Special teams, which we'll talk about at length in a bit, have been absolutely dynamite. The defense has really picked it up. I mean, for the most part, the offensive line's been pretty good. This one, I thought that they struggled a bit, especially with Kelvin Palmer replacing Chris Van Zyl. Cordero Law had 3 sacks in this one and wrecked a lot of havoc in the backfield in this game against the Cats. And Cordero Law's a great player, so that's not a surprise. But I think we noticed the absence of Van Zyl in this game. I didn't think Mazzoli had as much time as he's had in previous games. There were some times there where he got to sit back there and sling it and made some nice throws. But I think in this one, I think overall, you kind of look at the offensive line, I think this was maybe one of their poorer outings of the year.
Yeah, when you're missing a guy like Van Zyl, you know, a guy that's new to the Ticats, but I presume is, you know, if not the leader, one of the leaders on that offensive line, it's a tough loss. And Kevin Palmer is a good young player, but he's no Chris Van Zyl, and I just can't wait to get him back in the lineup, because when he was in the lineup, this offensive line was, you know, one of the best I've seen in years with the Ticats, maybe going back to the Danny Mac days of the 1998-1999.
You brought up the run game a little bit earlier, Malik Irons. I wanted to get your kind of impressions on Irons. This one, first career start, third-round draft pick, rookie out of Ohio University. I thought he was decent. I didn't think he got a lot of work. Like 14 carries, I mean, in a Ticats offense, that's a lot of work. 61 yards, like you mentioned. Nothing that really stood out. He had a couple, I thought, really good runs, especially he had one late in the game. I think he picked up like 9 yards on a first down carry when everyone in the building knew they were going to run. And he just kind of like willed his way to almost the first down. Took more time off the clock because the Cats got a first down on the next play. Kind of set it up so that they could They ran the ball like I think 3, 4, or 5 times in a row there before they punted. But I think he's got some talent here, and I think I mean that's evident by the fact that he was a high draft pick. But I mean, obviously losing Sean Thomas Erlington is never a good thing, and I think this offense was more dynamic with him in it, so I think they definitely miss him. But I didn't think Irons was that bad. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought he played pretty good, and not great, but good. We've seen some flashes from him when he's touched the ball in previous games. Now he hasn't got a lot of touches, but when he has had the chance, he's made pretty good with it. So, the numbers don't really jump off the page. 4.4 yard average, but I don't think the offensive line was really opening up holes for him either. In previous games, the holes that were opening up for Sean Thomas Erlington were massive, and I think that you or I could have ran through those holes and had a pretty good game. But I think he has a lot of potential, and we'll have to see what it's going to be interesting what they do with the running game going forward, because with Sean Thomas Erlington out for a lengthy amount of time, you got to wonder if they're going to stick with Irons or if they're going to use Coombs a little bit more, because I thought that he ran the ball really well against Montreal.
I'd like to see them use both, like have sort of a thunder and lightning combination, because Irons seems like a guy who likes to pound it up the middle, and Coombs is your more of a scat back guy that can you get him in space, he makes a guy miss, he can get a big play. I think that's what I would try to do with now with Erlington. You got both, like he was he could do both. He could run up the gut and he could take it to the outside, so he's the best of both worlds, obviously. But I think you can find a way to utilize both these guys, and I think that'd be a lot of fun to see that. If with you got all these skill position players in this team, you got all this great talent with Tasker and Banks and Addison and Mike Jones when he gets an opportunity, although he's been obviously quiet this year so far, and we know what Mazzoli can do. I think if you can get some great production out of the running game and from your running backs, this offense, once it starts clicking, could be damn near unstoppable.
Yeah, and I think that we have the hogs to do that. I mean, the first couple, 3 or 4 or 5 games were tremendous in the running game. So if we can incorporate that more in the future, then I think it'll just help out the passing game. It'll help out Mazzoli. It'll give him more time, and I think we can do that. I think that the combination of Irons and Anthony Coombs could do a lot of good things. And Cam Marshall's still in the lineup too, and I know that they want to play a Canadian at that position, but he's a talented guy as well.
Okay, so if you're here to listen to us kind of crap on the team, that portion of the show is over. It's now time for the Slurp Fest because we're going to talk defense and special teams, and there's nothing negative, I don't believe, to talk about on either of these units. Let's talk defense first, Mike, and the sack attack in the hammer is back, and that's a lot of rhyming words, and I did not mean for that to happen. Another 4-sack performance from this team. Adrian Tracy, Simone Lawrence, Ja'Gari Davis, Ted Laurent all got to the quarterback and brought him down. They now, Mike, and I hope you're sitting down when I say this, they lead the league in sacks with 18. Last year, in 18 games, they had 31. In 5 games, they have 18. Do the math, people. You can see how many sacks per game that is. 3 players on this Ticats team are in the top 5 in sacks. Davis has 4. Lawrence and Laurent have 3. Mike, how good does it feel to have a defensive line and a defense itself that gets pressure on the quarterbacks and gets sacks?
Well, it helps out everything, right? I mean, you get pressure on the quarterback, you get sacks, and that's a great thing. But getting pressure on the quarterback and making the quarterback make decisions quicker than he usually would, and making mistakes, you get pressure on him, and then it turns into interceptions, perhaps, or just bad passes, incompletions. I think it's added a lot to this defense to have guys like Laurent and Davis and Adrian Tracy, and just
Dylan Wynn,
you
don't
can
forget
go
Dylan Wynn. Didn't get on the stat sheet,
Dylan
but was tackling a
Wynn,
little bit. He's been
yep,
tremendous this year.
he's Julian Hauser, the guys that are rotating in are getting the job done as well. So, I can't say enough good things about the defensive line. We haven't had this in so long, and it seems like we've had the talent, the potential to have a really threatening defensive line over the years, and it just hasn't happened. Well, this year, it's the real deal.
And the thing we can't forget, waiting in the wings, in the shadows, on the injured list, Jamal Westerman, who is a former all-star in this league, a former guy that was considered at one point one of the best Canadians in the CFL. He never won Most Outstanding Canadian, but I believe he was up for it one of his first years in the league with Winnipeg. He's still sitting out there waiting to get onto the field. And can you imagine bringing him in as a rotational player on the end, getting guys like Davis and Tracy more opportunities to get some rest and keeping them fresh? Like, this defensive line and this sack attack is just going to get better once a guy like Westerman gets healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. And we lost two guys in the linebacking core that were, very talented dudes. And I haven't really noticed a big drop off in the linebacker core. They just seem to really fill in those spots really well. And, missing Unamba and Dean, it sucks because they're great players, but, maybe got a little cheaper in that linebacking core and helped out the team overall. So I've been really impressed with them as well.
I agree. You bring in Justin Tuckle, you bring back Rico Murray. I think the drop off at both those positions has not been super noticeable. And I think the savings you made there by not giving, 200 plus to Dean or 150 to 175 to Unamba, and you did that on the defensive line. You bring in, you lose Dean and Unamba, but you bring in Jagari Davis and Dylan Wynn. I think if you were to do that trade two for two, I think I'd take it. And then you bring in a guy like Tuggle, bring back a guy like Murray on top of that. Like, I think this defense, even though Dean and Unamba are probably better than their replacements, I think this defense is better this year because of the guys that they added.
Oh yeah, as a whole, definitely. I mean, the run defense has been a bit of a question mark throughout the first, especially in the game against Montreal, where Stanback just ate us alive for 200 plus yards on the ground. But you look at the numbers in this game, and the Calgary Stampeders didn't get anything on the ground. I mean, they didn't run it that much, which is surprising coming off that slaughter to against Montreal. But Terry Williams only had 5 carries for 15 yards, and then Bagleton had a carry for 6 yards, and Kerry Kadeem, I don't even know who that guy is, at 3 carries for 6 yards. So complete shutdown of the running game from the Ticats against the Calgary Stampeders, who are usually a pretty balanced team in the run and pass category.
Yeah, 9 rushes for the Stamps to 40 passes. I mean, I guess 41 if you count Rob Maver's pass completion on the fake punt, which kudos to the Stamps in this one. As we move on, just want to say their special teams played really well in this. I loved the fake early in the game, the pump block that Carey had, who had a rushing touchdown. He had the pump block. Like, the Calgary Stampeders didn't make this one easy, and they made some plays too. And I always love when teams kind of go for those fake. They did the short kickoff, I think, to start the second half too, which was interesting. I think the winds might have had an effect on that. But no, I always like to hand it to teams. We do it with the Ticats when they're going for two and stuff, like playing to win, going for those short kicks. I like it. I'm going to call it out when another team does it as well. Strips, Mike, forced fumbles. Ticats got two of them and recovered them. And Delvin Bro had one. Adrian Tracy had the other. They look like mirror images of one another. They do the sort of punch out thing when they're chasing down a ball carrier. And both of them are kind of momentum swinging plays. The Stamps, especially on the Bro one, the Stamps had made a pretty big, I think it was a pass. And then Bro caught up from behind and punched it out and flipped the field back in the Ticats' favor. Don't believe they got any points. I think that's when Mazzoli threw his end zone interception and Ticats came in with nothing. But it did that. The Stamps didn't get anything either. So, it negates everything. But man, just seeing those two punch outs brought back kind of memories of like the Orlando Steinhauer defenses of like 2014, 2015. So I wonder if that's Mark Washington's influence or if it's Coach O as the head coach going like, hey, this worked for me when I was here. Let's see if we can try it again. But either way, beauty by both of them.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a combination of both coaches, preaching the, punch out the ball when you have the chance. But I was happy to see Delvin Bro have a bounce back game. You know, we're so used to seeing him dominate over the years with the Tiger Cats. And I think he's been picked on a little bit this season. Quarterbacks are going after him in which they never have before. He's had some penalty troubles early on in the season, but, this game, the stats don't really leap out. He had one defensive tackle, but a forced fumble and a fumble recovery. So, he didn't get picked on this game, and maybe he's back to his old form.
There's a really good article by Steve Milton of the Hamilton Spectator on this, because this is something that I think fans and pundits have started noticing. It's like, Man, teams are throwing up bro side a bit. That's a little different. And he's got this wonderful article about why that's the case. And Delvin Bro says, bring it on. The team essentially is playing more zone defense than they have in the past. Last year, they were strict man to man, if you remember, which I'm sure you do. Jerry Glanfield loved to blitz, loved to play man to man. That's what he did. So that's what they did. And they essentially just said, okay, if we're going to play man to man, no one's going to go up bro. Well, now he's playing a little more zone, so it's not necessarily that he's being thrown at more, but his zone is it's
Area, yeah.
honestly, go read the Milton article, whether you, Mike, or people listening to this, if you want to know kind of the intricacies of why this is happening. It's wonderful. He digs right into it, gets some quotes from everybody. It's an awesome article, as all Steve Milton articles are. So go read that, and you'll find out everything you kind of need to know about why sort of Delvin Bro is getting more action this year than he has in years past.
Yeah, and I think that Richard Leonard has had a bounce back season this year too. I
I'm
think
glad you
that.
brought that up. I was going to bring the same thing. I think he has too. Good point.
I think he benefits from not playing man to man every single down. He must be more comfortable in a zone defense because he's been playing a lot better than he did last year.
Yeah, so on this show, we call people out when we think they're playing poorly, and we praise them when they play better. And we're going to be doing that in a little bit with a certain kicker on our team that has surprised us in how great he's played so far this year. But the last thing I want to talk about on defense, Mike, was Kherrio Brooks went out with an injury, and the Ticats had to shuffle their defense a little bit. And at first, I couldn't understand why they had shuffled their defense. I'd forgotten that Brooks got hurt earlier in the game. And then you see Mike Daly at safety. You see Adeleke playing closer to the line of scrimmage. I think he was playing Sam linebacker. Maybe he was playing one of the halfback positions. I don't want to say for certain because like I don't have like the coach's game film in front of me. This is just when looking at it how I think it played out. And I think they bounced Rico to boundary half. I thought even with the changes, the defense played really well. I really really like Tunde Adeleke, and I think we talked about it when they signed him as a free agent, as this guy being like a sneaky good signing. Like one of those under the radar additions where people aren't going to talk about it until we really get a chance to see him play. He is a very versatile player. He brings an added dimension to the safety position, that speed that he has that we've kind of been lacking since. I mean, Daly wasn't a speed demon. Craig Butler wasn't a speed demon. Like it's probably been a while since we have a pretty fast guy back there at safety. But his versatility to me, he can play safety. He can play Sam in a pinch if they wanted to. He could return some kicks. Seeing him kind of be a jack of all trades in this defense reminds me a little bit of Eric Harris. Like, obviously, he's not as big, obviously, not as physical, but Eric Harris was kind of that jack of all trades guy for the Ticats back when he was here before he parlayed all his success in the CFL to a shot in the NFL, where he's now making some big bucks and playing some starting minutes for the Oakland Raiders. But man, just seeing the changes made and watching Adeleke play, man, one of the better signings this team made in the offseason.
Yeah, it adds a lot of versatility to the secondary. I mean, if they have to switch people around like they did in this game, Mike Daly, we talked about he's not the fastest guy in the world, but he's still a pretty darn good safety and can fill in if Adeleke has to, go to a linebacker position or a halfback position. It's a good thing to have him because he can slide into so many positions. It was a great signing and it didn't get that much pub. So I'm really happy to have him on the team.
So next is special teams, and I'm going to be an open book here. My literal notes for special teams, it's like six or seven exclamation points. We talked about Brandon Banks and his missed field goal return. Will Likely, we have to talk about that. That was, I'm watching the game, Stamps are up 14-0, and I'm going, oh man, this is going to get
Again.
ugly. It's typical Calgary Hamilton. And then literally on the kickoff, right after the Stamps score to make it 14-0, Likely takes it up the middle and takes it to the house, and it's okay, game on. Another kick return touchdown. I don't even have to look up the numbers, Mike. We pounded the over on 2.5 return touchdowns. We're 5 games into the year, and we've got four. So we both nailed that one. Let's pat ourselves on the back. We got at least one right at the end of the season. We'll know we have at least one right. But just it's Jeff Reinbold, man. This guy just knows how to coach special teams. He did it here before. How many guys on the Ticats during his tenure as special teams coordinator, this time and last, how many different guys have returned touchdowns for this team? It's probably got to be approaching pretty close to double digits, if not already above it. Like it's tremendous. I don't know where they find these guys, but Reinbold coaches them up, and they find a way to hit the end zone at least once in a season.
Yeah, and that return was pretty much all blocking. I
Yeah.
mean, Will Likely, he has great speed, and he went right up the middle, but he wasn't touched. There was a path right up the center of the field, which is a beautiful thing to watch. You don't see that very often, where the guy just goes straight up the middle of the field and doesn't get touched and just scores a touchdown. Just tremendous, tremendous blocking schemes, and you got to give credit to the guys that are throwing those blocks. I mean, they don't get a lot of credit because their names aren't up in lights, just like offensive linemen or whatever. But to me, that was all blocking.
Coverage units are the same thing, Mike. Coverage unit guys don't get a ton of pub either, but I thought the coverage units in this game were really good. But the thing outside of the touchdowns that I think we have to touch on is Lirim Hairalahu. Last year, he was known simply as the kicker because we came up with an idea that if he kept kicking balls out of bounds, we were not going to give him a name. I think he might have done that once this year so far, but his punting, which I thought was the worst aspect of his game. I thought his kickoffs were okay. I think his field goals are great. I have no issues with those, especially from distance. But I thought his punting was subpar. But in this game, he had two punts where he pinned the stamps inside their 10-yard line, including the clutchest of clutch punts with what, minute 10, minute 5 left in the game. The Ticats are trying to run out the clock. They get stopped. Third down. They wind the clock down. He boots one, nails him at like the 7 or 8 yard line. And with a young quarterback making a second career start, if your defense can't stop that guy from driving 102 yards on, you didn't deserve to win anyway. But Hairalahu nailing that punt in that moment and doing it perfectly, this guy has been fantastic this year so far. And after the grief we gave him last year, I think we got to give him all the praise for it this year because I think he's been tremendous.
Yeah, he's been great. Just one kick out of bounds so far this season, I believe. And he just I was a little wary about it in the off season, but he's come in. His punting's been great. His field goal average has been great. Kickoffs have been good. So he's just doing everything right, and it's great to see a guy who does all three things doing all three things very well. And he's a Canadian, so obviously I don't know anything, and them bringing him back was a tremendous move in the off season.
I don't know everything should be the slogan of this show.
I said I don't know anything.
Oh, anything. Okay, I don't know anything should be the slogan of this show.
There we go.
Okay, Potsky Player of the Week. Should we even bother? Like, no one out there is wondering who we're picking, are they?
I don't think so. I mean, it's got to be Brandon Banks. 9 receptions, 86 yards, 2 touchdowns receiving, and then of course the huge missed field goal return, 115 yards. Looked like the old Speedy B returning kicks back there. He is the Podsky Player of the Week, and it is well deserved.
And I think he was named the CFL's top performer
Yes,
of
he
the week
was.
for this week. And if I'm not mistaken, I think during the time we were away last week, he was named one of the league's top performers for the month of June. So the accolades just keep piling on to Speedy B. And if he keeps this up, I think he's got a lot more hardware coming his way near the end of the season.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't even want to say it, but if he gets a full season in, I think he's going to be in consideration for an MOP award.
Absolutely, no doubt about it in my mind. So, time for the news, Mike. And in Ticat land, there's really only one thing to talk about. We're recording this on a Tuesday, which is abnormal for us, but this was the day we had free. So, it's lucky because if we would have recorded at a regular time, we would have missed this. Simone Lawrence's suspension appeal was heard last week, and we got the decision earlier today that his 2-game suspension for his late hit on Saskatchewan Roughriders quarterback Zach Collaros is being upheld, and he will miss the next 2 games the Ticats play versus the Winnipeg Blue Bombers and, surprise, surprise, at the Saskatchewan Roughriders. So we have talked ad nauseum about this hit, both online, on the show. I don't really want to get into it too much. We both agreed back when the suspension was announced that we thought 2 games was fair. I still stand by that. I'm sure you do too as well, Mike. The interesting thing, though, that I saw in some comments about this, because obviously this was going to generate a lot of talk, was like, I wish I could remember where I saw it, but someone wrote that they wondered what this meant for repeat offenders. And by that, they meant someone who launches a first-time offender, never been fined for a hit, never been suspended, obviously, for a hit. And because of this, which, again, I will say, we all agree, warrants these types of harsh suspensions, as a first-time offender, he gets the maximum allowable suspension under the CBA. The max that the commissioner can suspend a player is 2 games. For a first-time offender, he gets 2 games. What happens when a repeat offender, and I believe they used Odell Willis as an example, what happens when he does this? And what happens when he does it 2 or 3 times in a season? Like, if you're giving a first-time offender the max suspension, you can't go any higher the next time. It seems like maybe – I don't know. I don't want to say that 2 games was too harsh because I don't believe that, but it is an interesting sort of comment and an interesting debate to kind of have, no?
Yeah, it is, and I'm not sure if there was a fine involved as well with the Simone hit. Maybe it was just the 2 games suspension. But maybe in the future, if it is a repeat offender, there will be a multiple game suspension and a heavy duty fine. I'm not sure because you can't suspend a player more than two games in the current CBA. So I'm not sure what they're going to do. I think that that's all they can do is if, say, for example, Odell Willis, you know, hits a player high again. I think that's all they can do is give him 2 games, and then, yeah, I mean, their hands are pretty much tied, right?
You would think, and I just – the thing that's bothered me about this whole ordeal isn't that it was one of, quote-unquote, our guys that is getting harsh treatment. Again, if this was anyone on MLS's team, I don't think there'd be any debate amongst Ticap fans that the guy deserves – if Charleston Hughes had hit Jeremiah Mazzoli like this, I think everyone in Ticat's land would be proclaiming it deserved a 2-game suspension as well. Maybe at least a 1-game suspension. Anyway, that's not the point. We've seen in the wake of this more headshots that have not been leveled with suspensions. What's his name? Nick Usher, I believe his name, from Edmonton, has had a couple of these really bad hits. I remember, oh my God, what was his name? Jordan Herdman, I think it is, for the BC Lions. Headbutted Chris Rainey when those two teams played a couple weeks ago. Like, I watched it and it was like, well, that's a pretty vicious hit. And then I think it was Dwayne Ford and Rod Black were like, that's football, that's football. And then you saw the replay and it's like he like nails him in the helmet with like the top of his helmet into like the bottom of Rainey's. Like, it was a headbutt. Like, we're talking like King Kong Bundy style headbutt. And it's like, where was the suspension for that? Like, we've seen headshots repeatedly in the aftermath of Simone's hit, and yet this is the only guy to get suspended. Like, as much as I agree with the suspension, I need to see more consistency out of the CFL before I'll start like applauding them for getting it right. Like, they got it right once and they've whiffed on it like 5 other times since then. There's got to be equal adjudication for everyone. And I know people will say like, oh, Caleros got hurt, so it should be — injury should not have an impact on whether or not a player gets a suspension. I'm not blaming Caleros for the hit in any way, shape, or form, but if it wasn't Simone that hit Zach Caleros, it was going to be someone else. You know what I mean? Like, Zach Caleros was one hit away from this happening regardless. And I'm not blaming Caleros, not saying that this in any way should mitigate Simone's culpability in this. Not at all. But, like, Mike Riley's had the piss knocked out of him. Headshot, headshot, headshot. All season long, none of these guys have been suspended. But Mike Riley bounces right back up. You know what I mean? Like, did the league look at the aftermath of the hit and go, well, Caleros got concussed? Like, you know what I mean? Like, that shouldn't matter. But it feels like it in this instance it did. I'm not seeing any consistency with the league's rulings on this. And until I do, I'm having a hard time really kind of praising the league for getting this right, you know?
Yeah, they need to, you know, not to repeat your word, but be more consistent. Absolutely. I mean, they're going to give Simone 2 games, then they should suspend or fine or whatever guys who do helmet shots as well, other guys. And I believe that it's never going to stop, but the punishment has to be there.
No, like, I'll say this. I hope that the Simone Lawrence hit on Zach Caleros is the last time we ever see that, but I'm not naive enough to think that it will be. Like,
no,
we're going to see these hits again. We've seen them since. We've seen guys lead with the crown of their helmets into other guys. Jeremiah Mazzoli kind of did it against the, well, I think it was Montreal, the game they won here in
Yes.
Hamilton, kind of led with his helmet to score a touchdown. Like, it's not going to, pardon me, it's not going to stop. So if the league wants to get tough on this, I'm all for it, but we've seen kind of nothing since Simone.
Yeah, I agree. It's a tough situation. I mean, football is football. I'll agree with, Dwayne in some sense. But we're trying to get rid of those hits, and if they happen, there has to be consequences. Not to steal from Mr. Cavis Reed, but yeah, they're trying to clean up the game, and yeah, the players have to know that they can't lead with their helmet anymore.
Man, you do this every week where you find a way to segue us into the next thing we want to talk about. And you just did it with Cavis Reed because, I mean, this has got to be the weirdest story to come out of the CFL in some time, right? This whole Cavis Reed firing thing.
Let me just get this out of the way right now.
Okay.
I do not know what the word circumvent means.
Really?
Yeah.
Circumvent. Have you watched Arrested Development?
I have I haven't seen the last season that they made on
Oh, okay.
Netflix.
No, this is from the earlier, the good seasons. Yeah, Job says circumvent, and it's like we need to circumvent, and Michael's like circumvent. Yeah, that's it. That's it. Anyway, before we get bogged down in talking about Arrested Development, okay, so circumvent. You want me to get the dictionary definition of, and we'll do a really lame reading of what it actually means.
Just do it on the fly here. You
Do it on the
know
fly.
what.
It's like getting around it, like finding a
Okay.
way to like covertly not do what you're supposed to do. You know what I mean?
Right. Okay. Yep.
So
I figured that's what it was, but I wasn't positive.
you weren't sure. Okay, that's fair. And you know what? We can all learn something new every day, and there's nothing wrong with that. So this story's just weird. Like, I mean, the CFL's known for having some pretty weird stories when it comes to stuff like this, but like the Alouettes win two games in a row. They're looking pretty good, and then they fire their general manager, and then the stories come out, and it's just what the hell? Like, which part of this was weirder to you, Mike? The plane tickets or the envelopes filled with cash?
I gotta go with the plane tickets just because GMs try to get around the salary cap. I'm not naive enough to believe that everyone is playing by the rules when it comes to the salary cap in the CFL. So I'm gonna have to go with the personal plane tickets, that are charged to the Alouettes. It's really mind-blowing that this guy could have the audacity to do that. When his record as the Alouettes GM is like 10-30 or something. So you're terrible at your job and you're stealing money from your employers, basically. Yeah. This guy can't get another job in the CFL. Who would be stupid enough to hire this guy? He is just the worst. He's the worst GM in a while that I've seen, and he obviously doesn't have much of a brain up top if he's using, taking advantage of the franchise like that.
How about not paying his rent?
Yeah,
Like,
I don't know what's going on with that. If maybe the team was supposed to pay it, or I mean the ownership hasn't been exactly super involved in the last year and a half. So I don't know what the details are on that, but that's a bad look as well.
I remember, and like, so Johnny Manziel, I hate the fact that we have to bring him up. He was like kind of barred from the league, you know, a lot of it had to do with like, you know, his past and like the stuff he did and how he kind of, it was more he brought ill repute onto the CFL by his actions. If Cavis Reed gets another job in the CFL, like how is he not completely toxic to hire? You know what I mean? Like you got a guy who, like this is a direct quote. I can't believe I'm actually reading this. This is from TSN 690. Matthew Pruill's sources say Cavis Reed was paying players who have personal registered companies. Those players were paying other players. Envelopes were going around for players who needed to be paid more money to get around the cap. Like, how, like that's mafia bagmen stuff. You know what I mean? And this is a guy who, was a middling at best special teams coordinator, a middling at best defensive coordinator, who ascended to a head coaching position where he was not good at all, then went on to be a special teams coordinator again with the Alouettes before he ascended to their general manager position. Like, this guy has failed upward. Like, he's going to be the president of the team the next time he gets hired. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, at this rate, he'll be commissioner within 2 years. Like, that's the, like, how has he continued? And apparently, from all sources, everyone that I've known that's met him, he's a really nice guy to talk to, but he's not good at anything he's ever accomplished in the CFL.
No. He came into the job, as the Montreal Alouettes GM. He already had a bad reputation, when it comes to coaching and whatnot. But then you add, at the end of this tenure, you add on all the shady stuff that he apparently was up to. And, it doesn't bode well for him in his future employment in football, in any league, really, because, employers are going to ask, about his past and if he wants to get a job, say, in the XFL or the Arena League or in the Freedom Football League or any other league that's coming up. It's going to be tough for him, and he did it to himself.
Yeah, I don't know, man. The CFL has
It's
always
a
had some
mess.
weird stories. Like, there's always something strange going on in this league. It's kind of what makes it a little fun to cover and to be a fan of when you get some of these just like out of left field things. I'm really trying to rack my brain the last time we saw something this bizarre. You know what I mean? Like, I can't even think off the top of my head, like, what would be even close to this.
Maybe Calgary owner wanting or telling the team that his son must be the starting quarterback, but
Yeah, that's pretty
that's
weird. Like, the entire
yeah,
Lieberman ownership
right.
situation in Ottawa and Shreveport was pretty odd. The guy that now, what was his name? Horn Chen, I think, owns like the
Yes.
Rough Riders names, and I don't know, man.
There's a lot of wacky stuff in the 90s going on that, that we probably can't even think of right now.
No, well, it's the 25th anniversary of the guy singing "Oh Christmas Tree."
Right, yes, in
And like,
Las
but
Vegas.
these things are like funny, right? Like, this is just like this is the stuff movies are made of.
Yeah, there could be an interesting documentary made about the Montreal Alouettes in the years from, whenever Kavis Reid took over until he was dismissed. That's for sure.
I would like a biography, an honest biography of like Kavis Reid's life in football and how he went from failure after failure and somehow got promoted. I think it would be a fascinating read because he's got to have something on someone to keep getting these jobs. And if he finds his way back into the league, I mean, I can't wait to talk about it if it happens, but I don't know what I'll say.
Let's just keep our fingers crossed it's not with Hamilton. And I don't think it will be, but yeah, you never know. You never know.
Oh, did you don't you I hope you just didn't jinx it.
I don't think I did. I think the Tiger Cats, I'll give the Tiger Cats organization a little bit more credit than that. I don't think they're going to bring in this clown anytime soon.
I don't think so either, but I kind of hope another team does and then we can all laugh at point our fingers and laugh at them.
Right.
Because that's really the only thing that you can
Maybe it'd
really
be
do.
Halifax. Be the GM. That would
Oh
be a
my
terrible, terrible first move, wouldn't
I mean, you might as well just fold the team right away if that's what they
it?
do.
Yeah, I wasn't too fond of them bringing in when there were the rumors were going around that they were going to hire Tillman, but I think that would be equally as bad or if not worse if they brought in Kavis Reid.
I'll take Tillman's had success in the CFL. It's a
Yeah,
long
he
time
has.
ago, but he's had success. Kavis Reed's known for now, I think, three things: 13th man in Saskatchewan, consequences in Edmonton, and now whatever you want to call this story.
Envelopes in Montreal.
Oh, jeez. Envelopes. Jeez. Just, I don't know. This is just crazy to me. This is wild. So let's move on. I don't think we have anything else to say about it. But if anything else more comes out, believe me, we're going to cover it, Mike.
Yeah, and I think that they fired two other people within the
Yeah, I
organization.
saw that.
Yeah, and you got to wonder if the team president, I forget his name right now.
Patrick Boivin.
Yes, that's it. You got to wonder if he's going to get canned fairly soon too, because they need a fresh start in Montreal. They need a clean slate. You know, they're 2-2. They're sitting pretty good right now in the Eastern Division, and you know, I think they can really bounce back from this if they bring in the right people, get the right owner, and I think this franchise can thrive once again.
No, I think they are headed in the right direction. But you know, I just thought of something. What are these players that are getting this extra pay? Like, are their contracts going to be voided? How do you deal with that? Are they going to be fined, possibly suspended? Because like they partook in this as well. So there's some. I don't think this is the last we've heard of this story because I think there's a lot more names that need to come out, no?
Yeah, I think the CFL has to really. I mean, it's funny because the CFL owns the team right now, so they're going to punish themselves, I guess. But yeah, they really have to look into this and see what, you know, if it was how deep this conspiracy really goes.
And I mean, how many teams lost free agents to Montreal over the last couple of years because of this circumventing of the salary cap? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
Like,
maybe taking away some draft picks or something to that effect.
maybe, you know what might be a good idea? I've just thought of this off the top of my head. You find out how much money they've paid to these players over the cap, and you deduct that amount from their cap. So let's say, for instance, $500,000 they paid out over the last however many years with Reed at the helm outside of the cap. They get penalized $500,000 on their salary cap for the next season. So it's not a lot of money. It probably won't cost them a ton of players, but maybe that's the way you kind of even the playing field.
Oh, $500,000, you know,
Well,
you get
that's
three or
five players at 100 grand. That's five
yeah,
pretty good
and the, you
players. That's
know,
10
players,
rookies.
yeah, players that are getting, you know, 100 grand are usually probably going to be starters or at least prominent backups. So it could do some damage if say the number is 500,000. We have no idea, but
No.
that would be a, you know, that's a pretty big chunk of change towards the CFL salary cap.
I mean, that's two-thirds of a Mike Riley.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I just because I think like I don't know if docking them draft like they don't have any draft picks to dock because they traded them all to
That's
Hamilton for
true.
Johnny Manziel.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
So I don't know if
Oh
that's
boy.
going to really matter. I don't know.
That's
I feel.
another thing to add to Cavis's legacy,
Oh
the Johnny
yeah.
Manziel trade.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of like maybe a fair way that doesn't, because I don't think you can make them okay. Well, you signed because like look like of the last year, Taylor Loeffler, Tommy Campbell, Jamal Westerman went there. Like I'm like there's a there, they signed a lot of like premier free agents. I don't think it's fair that you say, well, your contracts are void and now you have to go find another team, or because then they might just re-sign Montreal anyway. You know what I mean? Like I don't really think that'll really do anything to fix the problem. I don't know. I literally just came up with it off the top of my head that I said, well, what if, and maybe if it's like an astronomical number, like they spent $5 million or something, then you parse it out over the span of time. You know what? Like, I just feel like if they use this to gain a competitive advantage on the field by signing better players, it didn't work because the team's been terrible under Cavis Reed. But I mean, that was assuredly the reason why they would go and do something like this. Maybe the best way to sort of balance this out is, okay, every team gets the max, but the Owls have to suffer some sort of financial penalty, which isn't a fine because again, the CFL owns a team right now, and you're not going to find an owner if you say, oh, by the way, when you take over the team, you got to give us $1 million. You know what I mean? Like, you're
Oh
not going to
yeah,
find
that
anyone
would be good.
that's going to do that. So, and the CFL's not going to take $1 million from itself. That's silly. I don't know. Maybe this is again, like I said, right off the top of my head, maybe it's a creative way to sort of get out from under this, to punish the Owls for this and to kind of like restore the balance without like really upsetting the apple cart all that much.
Yeah, and it's gonna be tough to find out how much money they exactly. I mean, I assume there isn't, you know, a paper trail to these things, you know, it wouldn't be smart to mark down all the money,
I
all the
mean,
extra money you've
I
been giving
mean,
out.
what Cavis Reed has
Yeah.
done has never been smart, so I don't know. I wouldn't be
True.
surprised if there's
Yeah.
ledgers somewhere.
Yeah. Well, if I was in charge, I wouldn't be writing down those things, but you never know with Gavis.
Well, you know what? The easiest way to find is find players who have registered businesses under their names, because like that's where that starts, right? Like
True.
it was the thing with players who had registered businesses, and let me find the article again because I'll read what it said. Reed was paying players who have personal registered companies. So, I mean, maybe every player has, or a lot of players have that, because that wouldn't be abnormal, because, you know, players have their own, they have their own brand, right? Like, the, like we've seen that with a lot of players. So, but I mean, that's, maybe that's a place to start. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out, because like you said earlier, I don't think we're done with hearing about this story.
No, I think maybe the Cavis Reed part of it, like the salacious details of Reed's involvement, might be over, but I think there's a lot more names to come out. So I think this is something we'll definitely be keeping an eye on, and something we'll definitely be talking about on a on a future episode of the show.
I think so. And, you know, I just want to say, like, all the bad, it was nice to see Montreal crowd excited about football again, even though, you know, there are rivals in the East. It's always good to see, you know, a crowd that has been, you know, put through a lot in the recent past, have some fun at the stadium watching a football team put some good football on the field.
You know what? Maybe they found their quarterback. William Stanback looks like he's going to be a stud. I mean, the Owls are 2-2 and on a 2-game winning streak and in second place in the East Division right now. So, I mean, maybe it's Hamilton Montreal in the East Final in November.
Yeah, that, you know, no one saw that coming. Ottawa was a question mark. All the teams were really question marks in the East, except for Hamilton. But I didn't really see Montreal making a push. And it's still early, so they can still fall apart miserably. But I've liked what I've seen from Vernon Adams. I think he has a lot of potential, and he has improved over the last couple weeks. And I think he'll just get better and better.
So would you take Adams over your boy Pumpkin?
At this point, yes, I think so. I think that you gotta ride with the hot hand, and he's just a dynamic player who needs to improve his game in some aspects, you know, accuracy and all that. But I think he can do it. I think he can be a legitimate starting quarterback in this league.
So in the interest of full disclosure, we're not doing our new weekly game thoughts segment because I did not watch any other game this week, so I don't have any thoughts on any of the other games. Mike, you were kind enough to inform me that they were all kind of duds, which is nice of you. Mm-hmm. I did watch about 10 minutes of the Bombers and Argos game. I believe it was 21-0, and I said, well, this is over, and turned it off and went to bed. And we don't have a Ticats game to preview this week because they are on their first of three bye weeks this season. But I thought now would be kind of a good time. We're kind of at the third way point of the season. It is week six. The Ticats have played five games. They're sitting at 4-1, like we've discussed. They're just coming off a victory over the Calgary Stampeders. I thought now it'd be a good time to kind of discuss where this team is at right now. Kind of, well, I know we did it a bit when we talked about the game, but I think now we can break it down a little bit more. What do you say, Mike? If I would have told you at the beginning of the year, by the time the Ticats hit their bye, they're 4-1, would you have cared who they lost to? Would you have been happy that they were 4-1? Would it have mattered? Would you have said, well, they should be 5-0? Like, what would your thoughts have been, knowing what we know now, if you would have known at the beginning of the year?
Well, if you would have told me that at the beginning of the year, I would have been very, very pleased because, you know, the history of the Ticats over the last, you know, 10 or so years has been slow starts for the most part. And to start 4-1, you know, we really hammered it home over the past couple of years doing the podcast. Yes, things pick up at Labor Day, but the games before Labor Day also matter, and it helps your team. You know, if you get those wins early on, you don't have to, you know, worry so much later on in the season. So I am overjoyed with the 4-1 record. The defense has been tremendous. The special teams have been spectacular. The only thing that needs to improve in my eyes is the offense as a whole. But I think we can get there. You know, we got the big test coming up after the bye week against the Bombers. That you know, the Calgary game was huge because of the implication, because of the long losing streak, the 8 years that we haven't beat Calgary. But the game against Winnipeg, I think Winnipeg is the cream of the crop in the CFL, and we're going to see what we're made of in about 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think the thing that I've noticed most about this team is its resiliency. You look at some of these games that they played this year, and we'll take out the two blowout wins over the Owls and the Argos because those were outliers. You're not going to get those often, let alone in back-to-back weeks, but in a season, period. But the victories over Saskatchewan and Calgary, they got down in both those games. They didn't play well to begin with, and they still found a way to win. And the offense in both those games wasn't very good. They won 23-17 over the Riders. They won 30-23 over the Stamps. But they found a way to keep themselves in it when the offense wasn't going well, and they came out with victories. A couple years ago, this team right now would be 2-3 because they would have lost both of those games. The Stamps would have won because that's what they always did, and they would have found a way to lose that Riders game. So that's the thing that I've noticed about this team. That they're finding ways to win, and maybe that's the difference maker. Whether we care about Mazzoli throwing for 1,000 yards in a game or whether we care about stats or any of that, I think the fact that this team, when they get down, they're finding a way to still get wins, essentially. I think that's the biggest difference that I'm seeing from this season from previous seasons.
Yeah, it's really encouraging, isn't it, that those wins, we haven't played our best games and we've still won. You know, good teams, the old cliche, good teams find a way to win. And I think we have a pretty darn good team on our hands this season, Josh. It's pretty exciting because, like I said before, if they can put this offense together and make it a juggernaut that it has been in the past, you know, we're going to be a pretty damn hard team to beat.
Well, and they're 3-0 at home. And winning at home, that's what you're expected to do. Calgary of the past, that, you know, 7, 8, sometimes 9 wins a year at home. You're getting 7, 8, 9 wins at home. You got to win 3 or 4 on the road to guarantee yourself, especially in the East, first place. You know what I mean? Like, you win 10, 11, you win 12 games in the East, you're going to be the first place team in the East. You win 11 games, you're probably going to be first place. You win 10 games, maybe you're in a bit of a dogfight, but it's still doable. Ticats are 3-0 at home. They're 1-1 on the road. They've got a home game coming up. If they can beat the Bombers, and I know the Bombers are undefeated, they're probably going to stay undefeated. They're at home to Ottawa this week. This is probably going to be a 5-0 team facing a 4-1 team. The two best teams in each respective division battling it out. That's a heavyweight title fight if you've ever seen one. It's a game that everyone's going to have circled after this week's over, going, that's the game of the week next week. But it's in Hamilton, so even if the Ticats aren't playing well and the Bombers are playing at their best, and even Winnipeg, if you watch some of those games, yes, they blew out the Argos, but it feels like everyone's blown out the Argos with the exception of the BC Lions. So maybe we take those Argos victories kind of out of there. Winnipeg has struggled a bit in some of their victories. They've looked good for the most part. Obviously, being undefeated speaks for itself. But I think you look at these two teams being pretty evenly matched, and it's in Hamilton. So at best, you look at that and say it's a pick 'em. Then they go to Saskatchewan the week after that, and you go, okay, playing Regina is pretty tough. But, I mean, Riders are 1-3 right now. Who knows what they'll be after this week? The Ticats are 4-1. Like, Hamilton's better. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that shouldn't be a scary game. But it's in Mosaic, so, you know, you kind of hedge your bets there. Then the next one after that is the BC Lions in Hamilton. BC's not good right now. Yes, they have Mike Riley. Yes, they have a ton of guys. Yes, they're probably going to put it together at some point. Look at Ticats in that game and go, that's a game they should win. Then they go.
Yeah, especially looking at the Ticats defensive line up against that offensive line,
they should get 10 sacks. Been,
yeah, they should. So,
they
yeah,
won't,
I can
but
see,
you know what I mean.
I can see a W.
Then they get Ottawa on the road and BC on the road, and then it's Labor Day. And you look at this schedule and you go, yes, it's never easy to win in the CFL. And maybe this is weird because we're Ticat fans and we're not used to being the team that's the juggernaut, with the exception that we always bring up of that beautiful summer in 2015 where they were just eating everyone alive. But this is not that team. This is not a team. Yes, they have the two big blowout wins, but they're a resilient team and they're winning at home. And you look at this schedule and you go, it's very possible, Mike, very, very possible that this team can go into Labor Day with one loss, two losses, maybe three, maybe, but I look at the schedule and I look at a game in Regina as always being tough, and I look at a game at game against Winnipeg that's going to be a dogfight, and then I look at the rest of the schedule and go, at what we've seen so far this season, that's what I'm basing it on. At home to BC, on the road to Ottawa, on the road to BC, that should be three wins. So there's three more wins right there. We're talking 7-1. So let's say we split with the Riders and the Bombers, and you get one win each there. This team's 8-2 going into Labor Day.
Yeah, I don't think that's we've had a record that good going to Labor Day, at least not that I can remember. And it would sure be exciting, you know, going into Labor Day facing the terrible Argonauts and just putting a whooping on them, and then we're 9-2, and then we just keep going from there. And obviously, in the second half of the season, we're gonna, you know, we're gonna be on the road in Calgary, and we're gonna be on the road in Edmonton. And even though we've had success in Edmonton over the last couple of years, this Edmonton team is pretty good out here too. So that's gonna be a challenging matchup. But yeah, things are looking bright right now for the Tiger Cats, my friend.
I look at the team where they're at now. I look at the schedule. If they are anything worse than 6-4, this has been an abject failure. And 6-4 to me is the absolute worst that this team should be heading into that Labor Day game against the Argos. But they should be 7-3, I think, is I won't say likely, but I'll say 7-3 is if they're going to Labor Day 7-3, I'll have no complaints.
I think it's realistic. I think it's realistic.
Yes, I do think it's realistic. And I think 8-2, I think 9-1 is even a positive. You know what I mean? Like, this is a resilient bunch. The games ahead of them on the schedule are not – there's not one game on this schedule that I could look at and go, I don't think they can win this one. You know what I mean? Like, yes, they're going to have a hiccup like they did against Montreal a couple of weeks ago. That is going to happen. So maybe they lose in BC. Maybe they lose in Ottawa. Something like that could happen. But I look at this team with how they're playing and still winning football games, and I look at the schedule coming up. Mike, we could be in some rarefied air come Labor Day, and man, would that be fun.
Yeah, I mean, if everything goes right, we could have clinch first in the East.
On Labor Day? You
know, well, not on Labor Day, but at a pretty early point in the season. It all depends on how the rest of the teams do in the East. But right now, we are above and beyond the favorite coming out of the Eastern Division.
So despite all we've seen this year, Mike, so far, the offense hasn't been great. We've seen some – the loss in Montreal was a bit of a kick in the clackers. Are you happy with where we're at or where the Hamilton Tiger Cats are at and where we are as a – are you happy with what you've seen so far of the Ticats this season?
Yeah, I think you got to be. There's room for improvement. But at this point in time, I am thrilled with how this team is projecting to be. I mean, they're 4-1 for goodness sakes, and that just doesn't happen in Hamilton. So, my confidence is at a record high for the Ticats, and I think going forward, I think it's going to be great. You know, getting that win and then going to the bye week and getting prepared for our biggest test. It's an exciting time to be a Ticats fan, I reckon.
4-1 with room for improvement. I think that's probably the best way to describe this team, and I will take that over 0-8 with room for improvement.
Oh my God, there's a lot of room for improvement that year.
But you know what I mean? Like, yes, this team has not played a perfect game or even close to it. Yes, they've had a couple of big blowouts, but like I said, the resiliency of this team, winning games that in years past they would have lost, no doubt in my mind. To be on the winning end of those games and to know that there's still more that this team can achieve, it really makes me excited for the next few weeks before. Like, we broke it down here. We'll break it down again probably around Labor Day, about the halfway point of the season. But, man, it's a lot of fun to be a Ticats fan right now.
So what do you got going into Labor Day? What's your prediction the record will be? I'll lay out a prediction as well.
Prediction. Okay. I'm going to go out on a limb and say they beat the Bombers. I think they get that one, so that puts them at 5-1. I'll say they lose to Saskatchewan, so they're 5-2. Beat BC, 6-2. Beat Ottawa, 7-2. Lose to BC, 7-3. I'll go 7-3.
All right, 7-3. I will go. I'll go 6-4. Just to be the pessimist.
Okay.
You know, I would take 6-4, and I hope I'm wrong. That, you know, 8-2 would be tremendous. But I'll throw
9-1 is what I'm hoping for.
9-1 would be the best, obviously. But I think it'll balance out a bit. I think that the Ticats are a better team than a lot of those teams, but you know, fluky things happen,
yep.
And things have a way of balancing out. So I'll go 6-4,
yep.
And they'll still be a wide margin ahead of any Eastern team, I think.
Yeah, and look, they have three road games in this next batch of games, and winning on the road is not easy. So if they can hold, court at home, they're 6-4.
Yep, I think that's doable.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, so you're thinking they win their home games, lose their road games. That's understandable. I look at – the reason I didn't want to go 6-4 is because I look at this Ottawa game, and I know that their record against the Red Blacks recently hasn't been very good. But that just feels to me like they've got they got the Calgary monkey off their back. That feels like where they get the Ottawa monkey off their back, you know?
Yeah, I could see it too. Yeah. They could easily be 7-3, and I would not be surprised.
No, and look, if they're 6-4, yeah, all right, bummer, because they started 4-1, and they, you know, but hey, beats 0-8.
Yeah, we've seen much worse.
Much worse. All right, so that was Podski Weaver for this week. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.